Wade, and I'm standing in to cover as chair for today's meeting for the Youth Services Committee. So I'd like to call the meeting to order. And if we could bring up the flag and do the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, so if you could place your right hand over your heart, and I'll start with I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Perfect, thank you. And if we could do a board member roll call, please.
Gloria Alvarado. Trung Lee, John Luker, Doug Mangione.
Here.
Carlos Oregon.
Here.
And Kathy Boyd.
Here.
And we do not have quorum at this time.
Okay. Do we have any public comments?
We did not receive any public or any requests to speak in advance. If there are members of the public this morning that would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. And I see none, Chair.
Okay. So at this time, we can move on to our first action item, which is, I think, 5, or first agenda item. Program performance. And is that going to be you, Karma?
Good morning. No, I'm going to ask that Maggie Lopez is promoted up so that she can provide performance reporting for the fourth quarter.
Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning. So for our fourth quarter for the Ready, Set, OC program in school youth, we actually had 211,026.52 in expenditures. This would be from April 1st through June 30th, 2022. Invoices have only paid up through March though. So it does only reflect those expenditures, bringing us to year to date 382,499.02. So they're at 70% expenditures. The rest of the invoices are still pending, so either have been reviewed and kicked back for corrections or have recently been resubmitted to accounting. So
can you also highlight that what the cutoff is, because that contract has expired?
Yes, correct. So they have 30 days from the time of the end of the contract. So as of July 30th, all their invoices should have been submitted. And so therefore, I think right now they're working on revising the supplemental invoice is what they're working on, I believe.
Well Maggie, I just want to also highlight it. So I just want to be clear with this board that the way the contract is written, there's a closeout period. If you do not submit your invoice before the closeout period, then you will not be compensated for the cost of the reimbursement. So this is one of those things that we have to put in order for our service providers to not drag out contracts over various program years, and so that we can do reconciliation of all of our costs. So as of this moment, I just want the board to be very clear that La Habra is at risk of not being paid because, Maggie, is it a 30-day or 60-day closeout period?
It's a 30-day.
So if it's a 30-day closeout period, June 30th was the end of that quarter. July 10th is when that invoice was due. From that period, they have until what day is the cutoff, Maggie, where they will not be compensated any longer?
It was a July 30th.
So after July 30th, they're not able to receive compensation for any of their expenditures incurred during that period. Is that correct, Maggie?
For any of their expenditures incurred, what? I'm sorry. It should be expenditures incurred up through 6/30, basically, but paid by 30 right. Within 30 days. Yes.
So let me make sure I'm clear with this board, because I don't want a complaint from the service providers in this board not understanding what we're saying. So if your contract ends on June 30th, you had until technically July 10th on a regular basis to send your June invoice in. However, after that period, you have 30 days to close out all of your expenditures for the entire year, right? And so that 30-day closeout period ends on what date, Maggie? Because I don't think we're on the same page of what I'm saying.
Okay. So if it was the 10 days after.
it's the 10th when your June invoice is due, right? But you still, after the end of the contract close, so June 30th was the end of the contract, right. You have 30 days for closeout period. When does that closeout period date end?
So it would have been July 30th.
Correct. So that we shouldn't be accepting any invoices from La Habra after July 30th because the closeout period technically ended. And so the fact that today is August the 4th and we still don't have those invoices reconciled could mean that that La Habra is in danger of not being paid. And in theory, we shouldn't be paying them because it's actually after the closeout period. So if we did the same thing, EDD is not entitled or required to pay any of our invoices after the closeout period has ended for the contract that we have with them.
That makes sense. You got to give these, you know, folks timelines, but is that the date to have the invoice in or for your staff to have it all reconciled and paid? I mean, is there a time limit on, let's say on the 29th, they dumped a whole bunch of invoices on you. And I'm sure, you know, everybody's got to go over everything. Once the invoice is in it, now it's in your hands. That still could be paid if they were correct.
So if you sent it in, so let's hypothetically say that you send 15 invoices to me on July 30th, right? And they were all in good order. I still have to pay you, right?
Because
you sent them in and they were in good order. But when you send me an invoice in and it's not in good order, then it becomes a challenge because now you sent an invoice that's not in good order and the closeout period has occurred.
Oh, yeah. Well, like you say, you want to make sure you can't carry these things over for months and months and months and months. That just encumbers your staff and everybody else. So yeah, I think I'm in agreement with that. And they have the time. They all know the rules. They should be getting their invoices in. But now if there were some invoices after, let's say they put invoices in June that are still being worked on, these numbers could change a little bit.
They could. So for example, if Maggie was hypothetically to say, like, let's say that they did have all the invoices in good order, but I asked Maggie to finalize this report, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, right? So then it wouldn't be updated if I don't have like everything in good order.
Right.
But the problem is, I just want to highlight the problem that we're in August the 4th and those invoices are still not in good order.
Yeah.
Two things happen. So remember, our money is first in, first out, right? And so I can't calculate how much money I have to give back to the state if the service providers are sending me invoices in August that are not in good order and I'm still going back and forth with them on how to clean it up, right? So that's one challenge. The second challenge is that hypothetically, let's say that I had the ability to spend some of that money so I wouldn't have to give it back to the state. Well, you've now taken that out of my
hands.
By delaying sending in your invoices in good order. Now, with this particular service provider, we offer technical assistance. I also know that they went to the city of Anaheim and asked them questions about our invoicing process. And Anaheim said, nope, Orange County is right, that you are supposed to be asking for backup documentation. So at this point in time, I don't think that any additional technical assistance could have been offered because we offered it. We gave them the rules. They also went to Anaheim to check and see if we were right, which Anaheim said, yes, they are. So at this point in time, I don't understand why the invoices aren't sent in. And I don't believe that there was any request for any extensions. Right. Maggie, was there a request for an extension on any of these invoices?
This is no. What it is. The other issue with the invoices, does it change like the enrollment numbers or are the invoices just the expenses and the money?
It's typically the expenses and the money because everything they do is supposed to be in CalJOP. So we should have real-time numbers on terms in terms of participant performance now.
Okay.
Even though it should be in CalJOPs, we have had some challenges with service providers not reporting, right? But in the contract, we tell them that they have 5 days to put information about a participant in the system. So it shouldn't be an issue with participant numbers.
Right. Okay.
If they're putting in CalJOPs like they're supposed to.
As they're supposed to. That's real time data. The people coming in and out and being serviced is real time because they're entering into a system.
Correct.
But the accounting for the expenses is on an invoice and that could, who knows how long. Okay, I get it. Thank you.
Just one more point of clarification. I know that they've had a lot of turnover in personnel. Do we think maybe that's part of the reason that this invoicing situation has been, you know, not done? Is somebody else left maybe?
It's possible. I wouldn't doubt that wouldn't probably, but even if that was a situation, you probably should ask us for an extension.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Yeah, just checking.
I think their staffing issues really, the rules are the rules. You know, whether they changed a lot of people or had people quit on them, do something proactive, not just delay the process. So
yeah, we're all in agreement, I think. I don't disagree with it. I just wanted to see if that was maybe, that was my instinct. And I was thinking, anyway, thank you very much. I think we're all in agreement on
same
that.
Same page.
Yeah, same page.
Yeah, I just had one question, Karma. I mean, I'm in agreement, but I'm curious if this type of these types of actions jeopardize a service provider from gaining a new contract with us or with the county, or how that's graded or judged given this type of, you know.
That's a great question. So, as the board, you can decide that this is a criteria of past performance and ability to show program and fiscal oversight. You can make that one of the criterias in the RFP process and say that, yes, you must be able to demonstrate that you have good financial oversight, which means that you could ask a letter from previous funders to say, yes, they are, you know, they have good financial practices. You could also ask for a performance letter. So we can certainly explore that. So as we develop the next RFP, we'll definitely need your insight of what would you like for us to include in the RFP, so that we cover things like this or concerns that you guys have as a board and as a committee overseeing these particular programs.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Does that close up this item for you, Maggie?
No, Maggie, I just needed her to kind of clarify that, because what I didn't want as a service provider to complain about the invoices, I needed the board to understand what was happening.
Fair enough, yeah. So I'll let you continue, Maggie.
And I just have one thing. Sorry. The expenditures, should that correlate with the performance numbers, or is it really two different things because they're not matching?
You're right. So here's how it works. So if I know on average, it takes about $4,500 per youth to take them from a place of disconnected to connected with an outcome, right? And so when I'm applying for funding, they ask me, like, how many participants do you anticipate serving, right? How many participants do you expect to get to this outcome? So on the average, if it's $4,500 per participant, and right now I have only 31 participants, let me tell you how much money that really should be. Yeah, let me get my calculator out. So it's 4,500 times, they've got 31 year to date. It should only be $139,500. But as you can see, year to date is $382,499.02.
Yeah, so the budget should somewhat match the contracted goals.
Correct. And it impacts our performance. So it impacts our performance and it impacts our funding. So for example, if I'm spending, so now let's go back. So if I told you the average was 4,500 participant, let's do this the other way. So if it's 382,499 divided by 31 participants, you're spending about $12,338 a participant. That's too much.
Yeah, right. four times what you expect them to spend. Yeah.
Right. And so when I go after grants, and this is my performance as a workforce system, it doesn't look like I'm doing really well at serving participants, that I have it under control on the cost per participant, as well as the ability to provide services to a wide array of participants in the community. I hope that makes sense. So it doesn't make me competitive.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, Maggie, back to you.
Okay. So for enrollments for the quarter, they actually had 8 new enrollments. So out of the 114 that they should have, they only had a total of 31. And then they had 56 actual carry-ins, which would have been anybody that they enrolled last program year but continued to serve during the program year. Medium earnings, 231. And so out of the 4,000, for a year to date of 3,687.32, putting them at 92% of the goal. For youth, education, military, or any placements, they didn't have any reported. So out of the 116, they were at a year to date of 6, putting them at 5%. Same thing for attainment of a degree or certificate for in-school youth, there weren't any. So out of the 105, actually for the year, from what's in CalJob system, there weren't zero, there weren't any. Same thing for literacy and numeracy. Nothing was captured in the CalJob system. For retention with the same employer and or education. So they had one for the quarter and their goal would have been 105 for the year, putting them at a year to date of 3. So only meeting 3% of that. For work experience, they actually had 2 new placements. And so for the year, they should have had 75, putting them at a year to date of 45, meeting 60% of that number. And then for exits, they actually had 11 exits out of the 38 that they were supposed to have. I'm sorry. So 11 exits for a year to date of 34 out of the 38 that they needed to have, bringing them to 89%. And so from the new enrollments that they had for the quarter, all 8 of them were provided services during that first week, putting them at the year to date of 31. And for ITAs and OJTs for in-school youth, there weren't any. So now moving on to the out-of-school performance. I think that's, yeah. Okay. So for quarter 4 expenditures, same thing applies. We only paid invoices up through March. So those expenditures there are what was paid during that quarter. $394,810.07 for a year-to-date expenditures of $768,93.60. So only spending 47% of the budget so far. For new enrollments, they actually had 38 enrollments, putting them at a year-to-date of 182 out of the 334, putting them at 54%. And then the carry-ins that they actually had from the previous year, enrollments were 106 year-to-date, so that didn't change. Medium earnings for placements was $6,569 for a year to date of $10,627.94. So that one they exceeded. For youth placements into military apprenticeships or post-secondary education, they actually had 3 new placements, putting them at a year to date of 12 out of the 347, so meeting 3% of that goal. So for attainment of a degree or certificate, they actually had 3 people that earned a credential, putting them at 28 out of the 225, so meeting 9% of that goal. And for literacy and numeracy gain, they actually showed a total of 16 participants for a year to date of 46 out of the 225, so meeting 20% of that goal. For retention with the same employer or post-secondary education, they actually had 2, bringing them up to 3 out of the 315 that they were supposed to meet, only 1%. For work experience, they had 3 new placements into WETS for a total of 48 out of the 225, putting them at 21%. And for exits for the quarter, they had a total of 58, bringing them to 114, so exceeding the contracted goal of 113, putting them at 127% of that goal. And so out of the participants that were enrolled for the quarter, all 38 of them were provided services during that first week of enrollment. Can you scroll down, Desiree, a little bit? And so for ITAs, they didn't have any for the quarter, but year to date would have been 7, and that included anybody that may have been in an ITA from previous years. And OJT, same thing, no OJTs for the year.
Okay.
A quick question on that last one. There was a little note saying CalJobs was down at the end. Did that affect any of these numbers? There's a little asterisk.
Oh, yes.
That so was all one this, number or so?
So about 3 weeks, the last 3 weeks of the quarter, CalJobs system had been down. But once they came back up, they were given time to actually enter their data.
Okay.
So this is data pulled.
Okay.
As of when we ran reports last week.
Okay. And it looks like the out of school seem to have a little more success with out of school than they do with in school. I know sometimes working with high schools, it could be difficult, but you know, you have your you know, your career people there too. But it looks like these numbers, although not totally up to speed, look better than their in-school youth. This program doesn't look too bad. Still not great, especially the military apprenticeship training. That's pretty low. Especially when they said they could contract 347. I don't know where they come up with the number, but they ought to revise that. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that, Maggie. That's a good explanation. Again, I think we're just all a little lackluster because I know we've been looking for increases in performance in general, but moving on to your next part.
Okay, so this is for Steph's report, again, for last quarter, April through June 30th. And so for the year, they actually had a budget of $52,000. So this one only covers the salaries for the staff they actually spend out. So 100% of the budget. For the contracted goals, they had one new enrollment for the year, putting them at a year-to-date of 52 out of the 50 contracted to do. So putting them at 104%. For in-school youth, they didn't have any enrollments. And so that didn't change year-to-date, was only 3 out of the 50 for 6%. They actually did have one new partnership with businesses, and that was the employer for that work site that they had the placement. So one, putting them at 29 out of the 35, meeting 83%. And so this one's a little bit different, but remember, STEPS only offers work readiness and work experience. So work experience, they had three new placements for the year, putting them at 43 out of the 100 that they were initially to contract out or to fulfill within that first year of the contract, putting them at 43%. And then referrals to Ready, Set, OC program, they actually had one new referral for a total of 22 referred out of the 20 that they were supposed to do, putting them at 110%. And then retention, they've only had one participant retain employment. I'm sorry. Retention, they had none, but for a year to date of 3, putting them at 5%. And then program exits, they had one for a total of year to date 49 exits. And so for trainings down at the bottom, this is just a year to date recap. They actually provided services for 36 of them within the second and fourth week. For seven of them, they actually did between 1 and 2 months of the program enrollment. And for one of them, So for seven of them, they provided services within 2 to 4 weeks. And then for one of them, between 1 to 2 months. And so for one of them, more than 2 weeks since the enrollment into the program. And for three of them, which are the newer enrollments, they are yet to be engaged. So they're in that initial phase, basically. And so vocational training, they provided four for the year. For ITAs, they actually had one youth go into an ITA and none go into OJTs.
I have a quick question on retention with the same employer. Is the contracted goal, were those people in the pipeline, or did they contract for 60, but they actually only got three people a job that stayed with the same employee? Is that number 60? I mean, retention with the same employer, I would think that number would be someone in the system already that they're trying to get employed, or am I seeing that wrong? That's just a goal.
So
maybe I'm not making sense.
Do you want me to explain, Carmen?
Well, what I'm saying is yeah. Did they only have three people that they placed with an employee? Oh, okay.
That would have been a contracted goal. So for this contract, it's a little bit different. This was an extension from previous years. So initially they were contracted to serve 50 STEPS participants and 50 WIOA. Then later down the line, they actually amended the contract And so these numbers were basically the same from that initial contract. So therefore, okay, they were only projected contracted goals based off the initial numbers.
Okay, thanks.
You can move on to Maggie, we're good.
I had finished that report. I'm not sure what's next on the agenda, Desiree. Unless you have any questions, I believe we have the service providers available for questions.
No, well, Maggie, what I wanted to do is make sure we go through all of this, and if they did have any questions, to do that. But I wanted to, because we have one member getting off at 9:30. I wanted to try to cover as much as it is before he had to get off.
He already got off, Karma.
Oh, never mind.
Did you want me to go over updates then, Karma? Okay, sorry. Okay, so for program updates for Youth with Impact, we actually had two youth complete during the quarter. And then we're working on the next cohort starting during this quarter that we're currently in. For 211, we actually had three placements. Two of them are on track to complete WEC during this quarter. For financial literacy, we actually had three complete that had started previous quarter, and then seven new ones that began that are on track to complete during this current quarter that we're in. For justice involved youth, we actually provide monthly orientations virtually for juvenile hall and for the Youth Leadership Academy on a monthly basis, so the first Monday of the month. And then from there, they provide referrals for any youth that are interested. And then from there, we'll follow up and provide enrollment and or further screening for them.
Great. Doug, do you have any comments or questions on that?
No, thank you.
Okay, great. And then if you guys are ready, we can move on to item 7.
So location updates, we currently are providing services both in person and virtually at Orangewood Foundation, Manchester Office Building, Orangewood, which is our Workforce Solutions Center, and then through our mobile unit. For most of those offices, we have extended hours with the exception of Manchester Office Building. We only provide services 8 to 5. And then for the mobile unit, we have staff out there at least once or twice a month on the unit. And then we also provide services by appointment for any youth that actually can't come to any of the locations and would rather meet us through at the mobile unit.
Wonderful, thank you. And are we gonna move on to success stories?
Before we do, I just wanna make sure that Maggie's right. We did ask we always ask the service providers to come in case you guys have any questions for them. Did you guys have any questions for the service providers before we get into the success stories? No,
I do not have any questions. Doug, do you have any questions for the service providers?
No, thank you.
And so Desiree, if you can promote, I believe we have two youth from the Ready Set OC program, and then we have one youth from the STEPS program. And for the one youth from the STEPS program, can you also promote Chris? Chris from Goodwill, Chris Stoner. Okay, if we want to go ahead and get started with Brian Delgado, who is with our Ready Set OC program.
Hello, I'm Brian Delgado, a CNB student at San Francisco State University. I guess this is my testimony of how about everything. Main reason why I came here is because for a couple of months, I've been looking for a job, doing a lot of resumes and just talking to a lot of employees and restaurants. None of them answered me, and they still haven't answered me. And coming here, my brother who came here a long time ago, he actually got a job at Pep Boys, and my mom just quite recently remembered that they did this, so I came here looking for a chance, and yeah, that's what happened. And then they helped me because, well, they created a resume for me. They helped create a resume, which mine was terrible, the one that I made from school. And they set me up for the job in a very short amount of time. And I'm on track to go to school on August 22nd. In a very short amount of time, I was able to get a job and have pretty much experience. So that way, more jobs will accept me and reconsider because I have experience. And just happy to be here, I guess, yeah. I guess my goals are to use this as experience and keep getting more jobs, gaining even more experience and whatnot.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Thanks for sharing your story.
Joseph.
Hi, my name is Joseph Mwamba. And so I'm just supposed to talk about how like this program helped me, right? And so I remember I got introduced with the youth center in La Habra. It was back in like 2019. I met Jake, and he just at the time I was looking to go into school, like a vocational school, to either get my CNA license or like my barber license, but I didn't have any like resources to help me because I don't have anybody help me. And for a little while, I didn't know how I was going to pay for it. And then I met Jake through the youth center in La Habra. After a while, he was able to fill out some paperwork for me and pay for me to go to school. I ended up going to school. I got my CNA license. And now just recently, not too long ago, I just got a job working with Autism Learning Partners as a part-time right now. And like all of it was like through the help with, I think some lady named Marisa. I'm not sure what's her name, but she also helped me out a lot. And now they're still helping me because even though I just started my job, I kind of like something happened with my car, so I had to fix that, and I moved out of my apartment. I don't get to move back into August 18th, and the youth center in La Habra is helping me pay for my motel, and they've helped me a lot. Like I wouldn't never went to school if it wasn't for them, because I didn't have the money to take care of it, and I wouldn't have this job if it wasn't because of them, and I wouldn't be where I'm at. If it wasn't because of them, they helped me out a lot, mostly with the school.
Well, congratulations on your job, Joseph. Thanks for sharing your story with us. These details help us understand, and it's impressive. So thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
You're muted, Chris. So now we have Taz, and Chris is going to go ahead and work with him.
Hey, Taz. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself to the group?
Hi. I'm Taz Sebastian. I have been participating in the STEPS program, and I have work experience position.
Yeah, at so
coffee shop. I have learned.
Go ahead, Tosh.
I have learned so many things, like how to make many different kinds of drinks, and since I've been doing that for quite a while, I know what goes in them pretty much, and I know how to do latte art.
Fantastic. Yeah, so Taz is working at our one of our sites, Able Coffee, and they're a coffee roaster that was founded by a behavioral specialist in education. So their focus is really on providing employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities. So just a wonderful environment for him. Is this your first time doing a work experience or your first paid gig, or have you had a job before this?
This is my first time doing the worker experience.
Very exciting. What's your favorite part about working there?
My coworkers are really nice, and I like that. And I just like making the drinks, and especially I like steaming the milk.
Yeah, that is fun. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Tosh. Much appreciated.
Yes, thank you for your story. And I'm a little jealous that I don't know how to do, did you call it latte art?
Yeah, it's really complicated. Sometimes I get a little frustrated when I can't do it right, especially when I know how to do it, but I just do it. I mess up.
Well, that's awesome. Great skill you've acquired. Thank you for sharing your story.
You're so welcome. It was nice talking to you.
You too. Have a great day.
You too.
Maggie, did we have anybody else? Okay. So I think the next thing, Karma, is the grant matrix. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I'm just going to highlight a couple of the grants. So in terms of the current grant awards on this list, the micro business grant is at the top of the page. So as you well know, we received over $3.9 million to fund micro businesses throughout Orange County with grants up to $2,500. We are still having a challenge with getting those grant awards in everyone's hand. The goal was to provide a little over 1,400 grants to marginalized communities and individuals that didn't necessarily have access to some of the other programs. As of today, we still have about 500 grants left, which means that we've got quite a bit of money that we still need to pour out into the community. So if you can help us by sharing that information with your networks, that would be great. We really want to have this fully expended. We really want to help as many businesses as we can in the community. And so your support would be very helpful. I'm going to skip down to the last page and just give you a highlight of some of the pending grant applications of where we are with them. So the very first one at the top of the list is the American Rescue Plan Good Jobs Challenge for $25 million. We did not win that grant. We received notice yesterday that we did not win. No one in Southern California or Orange County won. I think that was a grant that was administered by the Economic Development Administration. I think I've shared with you guys in the past why it's so difficult for us to get the awards through them. And it's primarily how we're set up and that we're not established as an EDA area, and we need to do that. So as you know, one of my goals is for us to become an EDA area so that we are a lot more competitive when it comes to EDA grants. So that one, of course, we did not receive. The next one is the Summer Training Employment Program. I did get the full executed contract. Maggie's working with Goodwill to get that one going again. So as you recall, we just read the performance where Goodwill was contracted to serve 50 youth and helping them gain access to employment. So we're going to contract with Goodwill again to provide this program for the next year. So hopefully we have another successful run with it. But that's an update for that one. So that one should begin and you should be getting a report out next quarter. The next grant on the list is the Regional Equity Recovery Partnership Grant. So as a reminder, we are required by WIOA to provide services, provide services as a region. So in partnership with Santa Ana, Anaheim, and our workforce, where we get together to do regional activities. So we received a grant for $1.3 million to continue our regional work. We are partnering with the community colleges to create education and training programs. I will tell you, one of the challenges that we have faced and are still facing is when we do these industry sector conversations, we do not have enough relationships with the businesses that we need to have relationships with to have those informed conversations, which is part of the challenge with our region and doing our regional work. So we really need our board members to help us engage with the business community, invite them to come have conversations with us so we can develop education and training programs that create pipelines for their industry. So just want to remind you guys, we really need your help. The next grant on the list is SURF. I think you both have heard about SURF, but just quick high level, I'll try to do as fast as I can. Governor Newsom, as a result of the pandemic, Governor Newsom put out a $600 million grant opportunity. It's broken up to two parts. The first part is the planning phase, where he's allowing regions to apply for $5 million to do planning for the region in developing three things. One, job creation, 2, raising up disadvantaged communities or marginalized populations. And then 3, working towards a carbon neutral net zero community. And that includes when we're working on the carbon neutral net zero, it's including how we engage with employers to create carbon, to reduce their carbon footprint, but it's also communities, like teaching the communities and working with the communities on how to do that, right? So this is like a 3-way grant. Now, the interesting thing about this grant is that it's $5 million for planning. The concept is where we're supposed to get together as a community with various stakeholders to resolve these issues. So work together to try to create solutions to the challenges in our disinvested communities. There is a requirement to have this community-led initiative. So it's not the county. It's not one particular organization. It's the community as a whole that gets together to solve these problems. So an HRTC had to be formed. Our HRTC in our program is called OC Rise. We have a website designed for OC Rise. You can go check it out and learn more about OC Rise. It's www.ocrise.com. After the planning grant, there is up to $500 million made available throughout the state of California for implementation grants. So those are grants all across the board. It could be for broadband access, job creation, employment, entrepreneurship. It could be a variety of different things, but the members of the HRTC have access to applying for the $500 million in grants. We partnered with Rancho Santiago to serve as the fiscal agent for this. And we have about 50 plus stakeholders that have signed up to be a part of our HRTC community. We're still accepting more members to the community. In Orange County, there were 2 applications that we know of that were submitted. It was one submitted by this partnership under OC Rise, and then OCBC submitted an application. Only one application will be awarded per region, and Orange County is its own region. We don't anticipate hearing anything back until late August, early September. If we are awarded, I'm just going to claim that we're going to be awarded. The next step would be for us to pull in the HRTC members and then work with the other group to see how we can just kind of create a community-wide collaboration to serve the best interests of Orange County. So more to come on that grant opportunity. We hope to hear back on our application soon. Are there any questions or concerns about any of the grant opportunities
on the grant? Oh, no, but thank you for the update on the Good Jobs Challenge. I had heard something across from a Northern California partner, and it was just, you know, that news just came yesterday, you said. So that's good to know. Thank you for the update. And the rest, we're excited about SURF possibly and more on the summer training. So anyway, good stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And then, so if you want to move to the EDD compliance update. So as I stated in the last committee meeting, I intend to give you guys updates in terms of compliance. So they're the orange part are the ongoing reviews by EDD in terms of our performance. So those are the open, so to speak, fiscal or program monitoring. And so as you can see, there's been no updates since the last meeting in terms of the old compliance observations and reports. So we've got some open all the way back to 2016. They have not been resolved. We're working diligently in cleaning up our practices so that as they evaluate these and look into it, we've cleaned up our practices, and hopefully that'll help us with some of those challenges that are being discussed in those. The green represents the program audits that have been completed. So as you can see, we've had several from 2018 all the way to 2021 that have been resolved. No compliance findings, no observations. So I contribute that to all of the policies and procedures as working with our service providers, kind of clean up practices. I believe that's why we have so many successfully closed compliance reviews with no challenges. The blue represents the compliance fiscal program monitoring we're doing with the service providers. So the blue and gray, excuse me, represent the open or ongoing compliance monitorings that we're doing with service providers and where we are with those. So as you can see, that the monitoring department is still reviewing 2021 and 21-22. Activities for some of our service providers in terms of fiscal reviews. And then they've got the 2019 is ongoing, so it's still open and they're reviewing that. And then the 2020 through 2022 program monitorings are upcoming. So as a reminder, during the pandemic, we weren't able to actually go out and review the activities of the service providers. So now that the world is kind of somewhat open, we're now going on site, reviewing some of the participant files, checking some of their practices, and hopefully reconciling activities to ensure that we are not only providing proper oversight of our service providers, but that we're also implementing the right policies and procedures to help them stay compliant. Any questions or concerns about our compliance and monitoring?
No, thanks. Thanks for that thorough review, though.
Okay.
Moving on, I think to your next item was discussions by about 24-25 procurement.
Right. So in the last board meeting, we walked away with the understanding that you wanted us to go back and evaluate the different populations in Orange County so that we can kind of work towards how we're going to contract moving forward. Maggie's done some research. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to her to kind of give you an update of what she was able to find.
Wonderful.
Okay, so we actually used data from the 27th Annual Orange County Conditions of Children's Report, and we found that the two highest populations there were foster youth with 1,233 children being entered into foster care. Out of those, though, here is the breakdown of ages. And so typically for our programs, it would only be the 14 to 24. So 18.2 out of those would be within our age range, putting us at, that would mean 224 youth would fall under that category. And then for the 7.2, that would be between the ages of 16 to 17, that's 7.2, which means about 88 youth would fall within that category if that's what we choose to do. Okay. Or for justice involved, which was a little bit higher, 2,619 juvenile arrests were made. And so it provides you the breakdown. So for youth ages 15 to 17 years old, there was 86.6% of those youth, which would have been 2,268. And then the 13% for youth between the ages of 13, 14, and putting us at 340 youth. So we also need additional time to research the youth with disabilities, because that's probably going to be the highest or close to the highest population. Okay. But we would need additional time. Obviously, that would count anybody with disabilities, whether physically, learning disabilities or anything else. So we can come back with that at a later time. But these are the three different special populations that we think maybe would be probably the best to choose from.
Right.
If we decide to do that pay for performance for those contracts.
Carmen, did you have something? Go ahead.
Yeah, so Maggie, I just want to kind of go back and review. So right now we know that about 288 foster youth, right? So if I add the 18.2 plus the 7.2, that's about 288, right?
It's about 312 between both, 224 and 88, yes.
That's 312 participants possibly there. And then for the two populations on the justice involved, what was that total number between the two?
It was a total of 2,608, which would be a little bit higher.
Yeah. So like if we focus on that, so that's, and remember I told you it's about an average of 4,500 participants. So if you were going to do a pilot project, you kind of keep in mind that it should be somewhere 4,500, maybe 5,000, because there's kind of a really
good range.
Yeah. But if you were going to do a pilot project, you wouldn't necessarily spend the entire $3 million of youth
right.
that you have, but maybe a portion of that to
right.
target one of these populations. Now, interesting enough, we're not scratching the surface on either one of those populations, because if you look at our in-school and out-of-school numbers,
right,
we're
so low. Yeah,
that's still low on that if there's so many of them. So I don't know. I think that this is still like this is not something I'm expecting for you guys to have a decision today. It's just something to explore, because remember the last meeting you said, hey, well, what is that? You know, what are the barriers? How
yeah.
much are we talking about, right? I think like Maggie said, there's going to be far more youth with disabilities, whether
yeah.
it's education disabilities, physical disabilities,
right.
mental disabilities. There are going to be far more of those. But again, with that number, we're still not kind of scratching the dent in VIOA of how many participants we can actually be serving. So we definitely, as a workforce system, have challenges, and it would be good to have a service provider that hones in on that population.
Right.
With the paper performance contract. So I think this might be, you know, a conversation we might have to carry over. Now, keep in mind that the next time we meet, we've got to start putting looking together.
Yeah.
We got to start putting together as the current RFP is set to expire. Is that right, Maggie, this year? It's set to expire this year. So it could be
next year.
So it could be a combination of the regular WIOA and then a paper performance RFP, like two out. But I definitely want you guys to start thinking through, like, what do you want that to look like? Who would you like to target? Because we definitely need to, we're not scratching the surface right now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I don't know, Doug, if you have any opinions. I mean, I definitely, the justice involved seems like it would be obviously out of these two groups, maybe the more appropriate one to go with, but I am kind of interested in the youth with disabilities as well. So when we get those numbers and maybe carrying this over to the next meeting where we have a larger group of us. But Doug, do you have any thoughts or opinions on?
I'm good. Pretty interesting numbers. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know we're getting close to that timeline. And so I'm good with the data. Thank you so much for gathering this data and giving it to us. I think it's really helpful. And hopefully next time we can have some idea of the, you know, youth with disabilities as well. And then I think, you know, hopefully the rest of the board members will be ready to move forward with that, those decisions that we need to make. Okay. Thank you for this. And then the last piece, guys, is open discussion. So is there any additional open discussion points you wanted to make, Doug, regarding anything at all?
No, I'm good.
As am I. So I think that calls for an adjournment to the meeting at whatever time we are, 9:56. And I guess thank everyone for showing up today and for giving your time. And appreciate all the reporting out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.